First of all, thank you. I'm a lawyer coming to Parliament. Just, the meeting will be streamed live on our parliamentary stream live broadcasting. I believe you met all the committee members. Edward, you know. Carmelo, you know as well, and the other members are Naomi Kakia and Amanda Spiteri Grech, who are all members of Parliament. And, we may expect some other members who can join us at the later on, because we are a little bit ahead of schedule. so your tenure as a Justice Commissioner comes at a time when there are various issues within member states, and I suppose this makes your tenure even more challenging, as you can attest yourself. The annual reports on the rule of law keep member states alert to keep up with reforms, while we in Malta obviously await the publication of the next report. If we look back at last year's report, I believe many positive actions have been undertaken together with significant reforms over the past few years with the support of several authoritative bodies, such as the European Commission itself, the GRECO, the OSCE, and also the Venice Commission. We commit as a country to keep the rule of law as a top priority to further strengthen public institutions and enhance the public trust. I must, if you allow me, must look back at the last year's report and the recommendations. Obviously, your first recommendations were regarded the involvement of the judiciary in the election of the Chief Justice. The Constitution now provides that the Chief Justice is to be appointed by a two-thirds majority of the members of the House of Representatives, which is a major step, given that the previous appointment of the Chief Justice was a direct appointment by the Prime Minister, obviously. An increase in the number of the members of the judiciary, we have witnessed that. The issue of the length on proceedings, we have discussed many bills in Parliament, as my colleague can attest here, the digitalization of the civil courts, the online filing of cases across most civil courts. There has been major amendments to the appeals procedure, but moreover there are other reforms which are being now in the phase of public consultation, waiting to be implemented, and one of, like in the field of the compilation of evidence, which relates to the criminal committal. Nonetheless, we acknowledge that more needs to be done to address the excessive length of proceedings in both civil and criminal courts, and Parliament will be a major debating place where such debate takes place. Your third recommendation was to address challenges related to the length of investigations and high-level cases of corruption, and this also has been discussed many times here in Parliament. And however, investigative authorities are independent of government, and therefore the government can only give tools and cannot interfere in such investigations. The fourth recommendation on the media, as you are aware, there is a public consultation going on. The Committee of Experts has requested more time to hold wider consultation after the two bills which were already presented in Parliament. Honestly, the sooner these bills make it through Parliament, the better. I know I was a journalist for many years on the receiving end of government mistreatment, including a criminal libel case filed by the then Prime Minister of the time. Taking journalists to criminal court is no longer an option thanks to this government. The last year's report mentioned the broadcasting authority and the public service. But if I may, on a personal note, on the broadcasting authority, I believe that in this day and age, we need to overhaul the broadcasting authority, because the broadcasting authority, as it operates today, it only regulates the television and radio, while broadcasting today has changed. It does not control any. The broadcasting authority has no control nor regulation on, for example, other media like portals or other media sources which are not the traditional media such as television and radio. I think that an overhaul should be on the table. The final recommendation in your report was on the National Human Rights Institutions. We are joined by another colleague in the meantime, Honourable Yves Bourgeonello. The political intention of the government on the National Commission for the Promotion of Equality is to be further strengthened and tasked with new responsibilities that will allow for more effectiveness in the fight against discrimination. The Equality Bill, which was tabled in Parliament and had not yet become law before the dissolution of Parliament, must be tabled again. So now we await the responsible minister to table again these bills so that the Parliament can go through all the process of implementing these bills before they come into law. Finally, may I thank you for your visit, which I believe will continue to strengthen the already powerful dialogue between the European Commission and our institutions, and mainly Parliament, of course, where such debate takes place and where all the reforms of all governments go through to become law.
No, thank you, Chair. Thank you very much for such an opportunity to meet honourable members of the Parliament that I know sometimes in some years, and we've worked together. I want maybe to start with saying that it's a pleasure to come back to Malta, because we have had many meetings during the pandemic by video, but it's quite better to come and to have direct contact with many people at different levels. And of course, you know that from the beginning of the mandate of this commission, we have worked on two main priorities, the green transition and the digital transition. I don't want to elaborate on what we are doing about that, but if I'm looking to the digital transition, of course, for a part, it's also dedicated to the justice system, because we want to be sure that there is a real effort in digitization of the justice system. Of course, immediately after the beginning of the mandate, we were confronted, like you and like many others in the world, to the pandemic, and we have tried to work on that, and in my portfolio it was more about the digital COVID certificate that you have used maybe on your smartphone. We have issued more than 2 billion certificates, and we are working with 80 different countries and regions, not only the member states, on the 5 continents with that. And when we were quite sure that it was possible to go out of the pandemic, it was the beginning of the Russian aggression against Ukraine on the 24th February last year. So I will say some words maybe also about what we are doing on this. But for the moment, the main goal of this country visit is maybe to discuss on the rule of law. And you know that I'm very proud that since 2020 again, we have had the opportunity to publish the rule of law report, the first edition then. In the third edition last year, like you mentioned, and you described all the recommendations, it was possible to come out with recommendations for all the member states on an equal footing with the same methodology. And, of course, in the new edition, the fourth edition, already this year in July, that will publish on the 5th of July, it will be important to assess the implementation of the recommendations described last year in our third report. And so I'm sure that it's very important to discuss with all the authorities in Malta, but first of all to say that we appreciate the support that we have received in the preparation of the different reports and in the different works trying to implement some kind of proposals that we have put forward, and certainly we'll continue to do that. So thanks for that and the possibility to work together. I don't want to repeat all what you have said, but just to describe maybe the situation that we have presented last year. Starting with the justice system, it's true that we have tried in the report to reflect on the number of reforms started in 2020, and that it was possible to organize at the legislative level, but also with a concrete implementation on the ground. And such reform, in particular the reform of the system of judicial appointments and of judicial discipline, have contributed to strengthening the independence of the Maltese justice system. Of course, we have said in our report that some challenges remain, and for example, like in other member states, the efficiency of the justice system, with some concern in particular relating to the length of proceedings, because we have seen a deterioration in recent years, maybe due also to the number of cases, but several initiatives are ongoing to contribute to the improvement of the efficiency of the justice system, but we have recommended in our report to strengthen these efforts, so to continue to work, and certainly with more resources for the justice system, so more appointment of judges, so human resources, but also financial resources, and certainly the digitalization. Of course, because you have mentioned the specific recommendation concerning the appointment of Chief Justice, I want to say that we don't have any criticism about the actual process to appoint the Chief Justice. I mean the fact that you need the two-thirds in the Parliament to do that. But what we ask, in relation also with the opinion of the Venice Commission from 2020, is to have a better involvement of the judiciary in the process. So maybe, if I may, if it's impossible for the moment to change the legislative text about the process, it's maybe possible for the Parliament to try on it in an informal way to organize a consultation of the judiciary. Maybe in the process for the next appointment, why not to try to organize a consultation of the judiciary. There are different possibilities to do that, and we are very open to exchange with you about that, to take into account, again, the European standards on the judicial appointments and the opinion of the Venice Commission. You know that since the beginning of my mandate, I've had to discuss a lot with the European Parliament, with the different ministers of justice in Malta, about the lessons learned from a tragic event, the murder of Daphne Caruana Galizia, and not only the lessons learned, the necessity to go further with the investigations and the prosecutions of the perpetrators of such a murder, and it's needed to continue to do that. I want to insist on the fact that it may be useful to do that. So in a good collaboration with European agencies like Europol, who are involved from the beginning, but also, of course, it's important to work more and more on the fight against corruption. Is the second chapter of the rule of law report. And, of course, Daphne Caruana Galizia was investigating tax evasion, money laundering, and corruption in Malta. And so there were many discussions since then about the way to go forward. And we, therefore, welcome the recommendations of the public inquiry into this assassination, which specifically addressed the fight against corruption. This includes, for example, measures to better detect inexplicable increases in assets of public officials, and in many member states we try to organize the process to be able to detect that, that when there is an increasing in the assets of public officials. However, we note in the rule of law report that there's been no specific follow-up till now by the Maltese government on this aspect of the recommendation so far, which we can only regret, so it will be maybe important to try to work on this. And we have seen, we mentioned that the recommendation, due to the fact that there are some problems with the length of the investigations for the high-level cases of corruption, and of course with the track record concerning the final judgment, not to say that we want to have condemnations, but to have a final decision after investigations. And that's maybe an important part of the discussion that we have about the fight against corruption. I know that you have had a long experience as a journalist, so about the media you have described the situation. We are sure that certainly in a country with such a size like Malta, it's very important to enhance the independence of the public service media. I know that there are other kind of new media services, and certainly on the Internet, like the digital developments that we have seen in all the member states, but it's very important to improve the situation for the independence of the public service media, and also the working environment of journalists. And you know that we have sent a recommendation to all the member states about the journalist safety and the way to protect the journalists, but also to give a better access to official documents. And that's a specific recommendation that we have put in the report. And certainly, after the Committee of Experts on Media Reform that has been appointed by the government, we try now to see how it's possible to go forward with the different bills that was possible to prepare, because I've discussed this with the Prime Minister this morning about five bills and in the process, and of course it's very important now to see after the reaction of the experts how it's possible to go forward and to transform the discussion or the discussions in real concrete new legislations. Of course we will monitor the development about the implementation of all those part of our report, and of course we try also to make a part of the job at the EU level. You know that we are coming with the European Media Freedom Act, and we try also to safeguard with that and to protect the editorial independence of the media. The last point in our report is dedicated to the checks and balances in the institutional order, and there I don't want to add what you have said about the national human rights institution. It's very important that after many other member states we had the opportunity to see the establishment of such a body in Moldova, and I know that now we are waiting for the new presentation of a bill to the Parliament. Maybe that to say that this year we'll come with our report with an assessment of the implementation of different recommendations, and it's the reason why it's very important to receive more and more information about the results of some processes, like new bills and new law at the end, new laws at the end of the process, but also information about the work in progress, sometimes useful, like for the five bills Dave explained about the media. Maybe one word on the situation concerning the war in Ukraine and the aggression of Russia against against Ukraine. Of course, I'm working, if you want, you may discuss about that, but I'm working a lot about the war crimes to be sure that it's possible to bring the perpetrators to justice, and we are involved in many processes with the Prosecutor General of Ukraine, with many member states having their own national investigations, or the International Criminal Court, to be sure that it's possible to move forward. There are already some condemnations in Ukraine. You have seen 2 hours warrants issued by the International Criminal Court, and we continue to work on it. But we have put us into place, and I'm in charge of that, a task force, a freeze and seize task force, to organize the freezing of assets of oligarchs and other entities. And, of course, we are very grateful for the support of Malta in the way to support Ukraine. We are working together with the military support, with financial support, with different kind of other actions to receive and to help refugees and so on, so we don't have any problem about that. We have a very good cooperation, and also in the implementation of the sanctions against Russia. We have just some questions or remarks. It was possible for the moment to freeze at the EU level more than 23 billion of euro of assets of oligarchs and different entities, because we have 1,600 individuals and entities on the sanctioned list. But I must say that I was quite surprised to see that in 2 member states we have a very low level of frozen assets, and it's the case in Greece, it's the case in Malta, with just more than 222,000 euros as frozen assets. If you compare with some member states where we are going to 3, 4, 5 billions, it's quite very surprising. And so, first of all, we try to receive more and more information about the reason why we have such a very low level. I've received different kind of explanations, and we'll continue to exchange with the government about the reasons of such a level, the possibilities that it was possible to see in Malta to work with other member states, to help the other member states to freeze some kind of assets, or yachts and other kind of assets, in other member states. But again, it's very important to have information about that, and to be sure that we have a correct implementation of the rules. I want to add that you know that it's also important to do that in relation with the discussions that we have had many times about the investment schemes. You know that we are before the Court of Justice about that. That will be for the Court of Justice to decide. But due to the fact that it was possible in the past to have such a kind of investment schemes with also people coming from Russia or from other part of the world, we want to be very concrete about the information that is needed to receive. But for the next step, I want to say that now in the sanctions, we try to work on the enforcement first, because it's fine to have a long list of sanctions, but it's very important to enforce. And to that, we have extended the list of the euro crimes in the treaty. So is the attempt to circumvent the sanctions has become to be a crime. Now we have put on the table of the Council and the Parliament a proposal of a directive to implement that and to be sure that it will be possible to move from the freezing of the assets to a confiscation, to the seizing of the assets. But to do that, we need a decision in justice with a criminal offence, and with the new European euro crime, it's possible to do that. So we'll try to continue to work with maybe some confiscations, because I said we are working on war crimes. The goal about a war crime is to bring the perpetrators to justice. About the assets, one of the goals is to be sure that Russia will pay for the reconstruction of Ukraine and for the reparation of damages. And so for the moment, we are working on a register of claims in The Hague with the Dutch government, with the Council of Europe, to be sure that it's possible to have a long list maybe of claims about the damages caused by the Russian aggression. But at the end, it will be very important to find the way to fund the compensations and to fund the reconstruction. And it's very important to us, and I welcome also the support of Malta in the Council in such a way, because we have a huge support in the way to go forward with the extension of the list of euro crime, with the proposal of directive, and to work on the sanctions. But again, it will be very important to work on it, like we have worked on the immobilization of the reserve Central Bank of Russia. There is not a question of some billions, it's around 300 billions of euro that we are speaking on. And, of course, it's an immobilization with a sort of guarantee, again, in the same way, to be sure that one day it would be possible for Russia to pay for the reconstruction and the compensation. I want to conclude to say on this part that what is very exceptional that we are doing that during the war is the first time that we are speaking all those things, or war crimes, or other international crimes, during the war. And if we are doing that, it's because we want to be sure, I said, to bring the perpetrators to justice, but also to try to give a clear signal for all the people having maybe in their mind the same idea to organize an aggression against a neighboring country. We want to be sure that it will be possible to organize prosecution. And is the reason why we are so, to conclude, in a huge discussion now about the crime of aggression. You know that it's possible to investigate, to prosecute, but also to organize a trial about other international crimes at the national level, also before the ICC. But now we try to see how it's possible to have a specific jurisdiction for the crime of aggression. And there we have a core group of 33 countries, not only member states, to discuss about that. And it will be a pleasure to see Malta taking part maybe in such a discussion too, because we need to have more and more support, and certainly through different international contacts that you have, to be able to convince partners in the so-called global south to support the same idea and to work with us, because we need to have support in Latin America, in Africa, or in Asia about that. So to describe the situation that we have now, and of course I will continue tomorrow with and civil society organizations and other kind of partners. I want just to say that on the next report, July, concerning to go back to the rule of law, concerning the rule of law, I will try to organize a country visit, of course, but with a real discussion with the civil society. We have had some first experience on this in Brussels, in Berlin, but I'm sure that it will be important after the discussion that we have had in 2020 to show now that there is a real debate in the civil society in Malta about the rule of law, and we will take maybe one of another recommendation, and we will see if it's possible to discuss that with many stakeholders around the table, maybe also the Parliament, but certainly, I mean, in the justice field, the Bar Association or Association of Judges or other kind of stakeholders, to show that at the end what we try to build is a real culture of the rule of law, And I thank you to take part in such a process with the discussions that you have in the Parliament, I know that, about the rule of law, because it's an element to build a real culture of the rule of law in the entire European Union, but certainly here in Malta.
Well, thank you very much. For certain, the Parliament will do its part in this debate. May I welcome also Honourable Mario De Marco and Honourable Bernice Bonello. I give the floor to Dr. Zamit Lewis first.
Thank you, and then probably the members from the opposition as well will pass their comments. Thank you very much, Commissioner Reynders. I'm privileged to be here, that I worked with you for a number of years, and thank you for your support to Malta, and for being clear as well with Malta where progress was needed, but for being fair as well when progress was made, and you remarked that the progress has been made. 5 points, and I'm going to be quite concise. The question of media freedom, it's very important you raised it. I believe that it's the next step which we expect government to take. We obviously support the position of the government, but we expect that there is a delivery on the question of media freedom. That is, more protection in our constitution of media freedom. Secondly, the SLAPP issue, which we are proposing amendments, obviously, within the parameters as well of treaties in the at a regional level, both binding EU member states and others broader, such as the Lugano Convention, which binds even states that are European but are not within the European Union. But we are very serious, and we support the government initiative as far as execution of judgments within these parameters and limitation of execution of judgments, in the sense that even if we respect the judgment, we limit the effect of the judgment, the quantum of the judgment, in accordance to our municipal law. There is the question as well of a preliminary hearing which is being proposed, that if it is blatantly a SLAPP issue or a frivolous issue, we are going to give the magistrate, because it's something which is dealt by our inferior courts, the right to dispose of the issue before hearing the case. These are amendments, I mean, that are important in limiting the effect of the SLAPP. I believe personally that it won't eliminate the SLAPP, because the SLAPP issue is wider than that, and it's not easy to care, but I believe that it is a genuine and it's an effective initiative forward. Secondly, a committee chaired by the Permanent Secretary of the Ministry responsible for Internal Security, together with the Commissioner of Police, the Chief Commander of the Armed Forces, wherein we assess threats vis-à-vis journalists, and third, to give journalism and free media a more prominent place in our constitution as well. So these are, they are not the alpha and omega of all we have to do, but we have to admit that they are good initiatives forward in our country to push forward the issue of media freedom. The second point is court delays. It's a difficult issue. I've been a minister for justice. My colleague Carmelo Musso Bonici has been before me minister for justice. It's not an issue of only government investment, but it is an issue of lawyers, of judges, magistrates, who everyone has to pull the same rope, everyone has to embrace what you rightly said, Commissioner, the issue of digitalization, which will help us to expedite proceedings. Everyone has to be responsible in a court case to his job, to be responsible and do his job, but as well the issue of court delays in the criminal processes. It was a process which I had started or completed, but obviously due to electoral timelines, we couldn't push it forward at that time, but it is an important initiative. But again, it is a law, and it's, in my opinion, it's not, I'm being quite frank here, it's not only a question of laws, it's a question of effectiveness of institutions. Which brings me to the third point, the fight against corruption. We promulgated several laws, even vis-à-vis Moneyval, vis-à-vis FATF, vis-à-vis our commitments which we took with the European Commission, and the current Prime Minister, Robert Abela, was always very serious about pushing this agenda forward. But again, it's not only about laws. We have to see, we are investing, but we have to see more investment and more effectiveness of action from institutions. So it's not a question only of promulgating laws. Something which we're doing, we invested considerably, we made considerable investment in our intelligence, financial intelligence, which is FIU. We are reaping some benefits, which are, in my opinion, obvious, but obviously I have to admit that we have a long way to go as well, that we can do better, but I believe that we are on the right track. The fourth point you mentioned is our institutional setup. We worked in reducing or limiting the powers of the Prime Minister, not the current Prime Minister. Our setup since 1964, we have this constitution that it's based on the Westminster model, that the Prime Minister has a lot of power. We have to admit it. It's our inheritance. It has its advantages, but it has its disadvantages as well. So we started on this process. I agree with you that we should continue on creating these institutional checks and balances. You mentioned the issue of the Chief Justice. I believe that together with the help of the opposition, we managed for Malta to do a landmark decision in Parliament that we elected the first Chief Justice with full approval of both government and the opposition, and I thank the opposition for their support. So for us, before we had a legal framework, so for us it is a big thing for how politics works and what, how the bipartisan system and a bit of polarization as well. Let's be honest, it has been a very good step forward, but We take your suggestion as well, based on the principle, as you said, Commissioner, which is voiced by the Venice Commission, that a judge should be judged and appointed by his own peers. We did that with regards vis-à-vis excluding the Chief Justice, to be quite honest. We did it with all the judges and magistrates. The situation is working. The people are taking responsibility. I believe that very competent people are being, obviously everyone has his opinion, but I believe that it's a more transparent system, and with your help especially, the interface with the Venice Commission has been a very healthy exercise for Malta, and I personally I will treasure it for all my professional political life, that it was a very good thing with it, and I wish that the government will keep this important interface. The last point is obviously Ukraine. Our position is very clear. I think as well the opposition in this regard that we have been quite united on this front, and we are saying that, look, we are neutral, but neutral doesn't mean that we are passive. Does it mean that from what is blatant we don't take a position? I mean, it's quite clear, and I believe that the opposition has has the same position. Thank you very much for being with us. I always wanted you to come. When I was minister, I was invited to, but obviously force majeure, let's put it that way, prevented us. But thank you very much for your time.
I don't know whether you have any comments or you would like to... Dr. DeMarco. Honourable Mario DeMarco.
Thank you so much, Commissioner, for your time and coming over. Let's look at the positive. A lot of work has been done, and I think progress has been done in certain regards. Having said that, as an opposition, we ought to have the responsibility to see and say where more can be done. And undoubtedly, more can be done in various areas. We speak about the autonomy of the institutions. We often speak about the autonomy of the judiciary. Though I'd like us also to emphasize as being an essential role also in the fight against corruption, be it high level or low level, is having a properly functioning police force. And we need to ensure that the police force is, to a large degree, autonomous and at the same time accountable. And we feel that not enough emphasis has been done in ensuring that we have a police force that is not an extension of the executive, albeit accountable to the executive and ultimately to the state. So we feel that more needs to be done to ensure that the police force, which traditionally has been appointed, including the Commissioner of Police, by the executive, will be truly an independent, autonomous investigatory tool. Which is why also we're obviously sometimes disappointed when we feel that corruption cases being investigated tend to be low-level corruption, and high-level corruption cases do not tend to be investigated as one would expect them to be so. The second thing that also one should consider, and I'm saying this more aloud rather than reflecting any party position, is whether it is healthy, and I pose this as a question rather than as a statement, for former judges to receive appointments by the executive subsequent to retirement. And I pose this simply as a question rather than as a statement as to whether the practice of having former judges receiving appointments by the executive in any way undermines their independence before retirement. The third point I'd like to make is that whilst, yes, the level of maturity that we showed as a country and as a government and opposition regarding the appointment of the Chief Justice, unfortunately was not shown with regards to the appointment of the Commissioner of Standards in Public Life. An important tool in the fight against corruption within the political class and public service. And the great little thing is rather than find a way forward and reach consensus on the appointment of this important position, we saw a legislation which was changed to ensure that a hand-picked person was put in place. I've always been taught that legislation should not be person-specific. But regrettably, we face a situation where legislation was put in place and passed in order for a person to be chosen and picked and appointed. The fourth point I'd like to make refers to the media and the important role of the fourth pillar of democracy. As we all know, independent media houses are facing tremendous challenges, not locally, but globally. The world of media has radically changed. The digitalization of media has radically changed. The form of revenue for media has radically changed. And where government is one of the main spenders in advertising for media outlets, it becomes a bit dangerous when certain media outlets are dependent on government spending as a source of revenue. And that undermines the very independence that our fourth pillar of democracy requires to be truly a pillar for democracy. At the same time, we do realize that the state has a responsibility to ensure the financial viability of independent media houses. Because without that financial viability, we will not have any more independent media houses, safeguarding the rule of law, safeguarding democracy. Insofar as concerns the issue of the length of proceedings, I tend to agree with my colleague, Dr. Zamit Lewis, that it's not only a matter of legislation, but it's also a matter of attitude. But again, whilst legislation is important, we need to train our judiciary on how to be effective. It's useless appointing additional judges, additional magistrates, if they're not given the right resources to be able to be effective judges and effective magistrates. So, to come to a conclusion, I think, yes, progress has been done. Some progress has been well intended, but I think we still have a long way to row to ensure that the rule of law be truly safeguarded and truly implemented.
Please, Commissioner.
No, maybe thanks for the different comments. Maybe first, I would say that you are making the same remarks in general that we are putting in our rule of law report. If you look to the recommendations that we have described, in fact, we are turning around the same kind of issues. Of course, what we try to see now is very concrete improvements. The reason why I said, just to give an example about the Chief Justice, I'm sure that it's a good evolution to have such a very large majority in the Parliament to appoint the Chief Justice. But it's very important also to have a real involvement of the judiciary in the process. And so maybe the next step, it's possible to think about, for the first time, an informal way to have a real consultation of the judiciary in the process. And we'll see if it's needed to change the law and to have a better formal involvement, but so to show that it's possible to make progress. I want to say that about the effectiveness of different kind of elements that you have described, it's true that for the length of procedures, I want to react on both comments. At first, it's not only a question of laws or investment in resources. Of course, we need more resources, human resources, financial resources, digital resources for the justice system, but training is important, of course, and to train the judges not only about EU law, but also about the ways to use digital tools. And I was impressed in one of the last justice councils, when we have discussed about that, there were some remarks to say yes, but sometimes a contradiction with the obligation to go to a training and the independence of the judiciary. I'm not sure. To be trained about digital tools is not a breach to the independence of the judge. So we need to install maybe better culture of professional training and so, but it's more and more the case in many member states. But there are also some possibilities for the parliament to work on procedural rules, because sometimes the length of the procedure is due to the parties in civil and commercial cases, and there are some possibilities to try to limit that and to give maybe more competence to the judges. But also in criminal cases, it's also possible to ask the judge to take more decisions and not to agree on all the requests of the different lawyers involved in the process. Of course, in full respect with the rights of, yes, the fair process and the rights of defense and so on. But I've seen, to give an example, in Italy, it was not only a question of more resources, it was a question of some amendments to the procedural rules, and then to change the culture, maybe through the training, maybe through some new rules that it's possible to put into place. Of course, when we are speaking about the fight against corruption, it's very important to move forward. And certainly, the transfer of some competence from the police people to the Attorney General office, it's an important element that we have seen. I visited the Attorney General office before to come to here, and I'm sure it's an important step, but it's not enough. And what we have seen now is that there are very long procedures without an output, without a real final decision. And so maybe it's also a question of culture in the police system or in the justice system to communicate, not about the content. We don't ask to have an information about the content of an investigation, but a state of play, where we are and where and when it will be possible to come out with something at the end of the procedure. Is that what we have mentioned with the track record on high-level case of corruption, because it's an important element that we have in our vision. When you spoke about the media boss, of course, there are a lot of things to do, and we are waiting for some bills that they are, for the moment, in the hands of the experts. It's true that the financial situation is very important because we have a real changing world in the media sector. But I've said also in the discussions with the Prime Minister, and I want to share that with you, that it's also maybe important to try to think about the specific situation of the different member states, because it's not the same to speak about media freedom in a very large member state with maybe the possibility to speak the same language in other member states, or to do that in a small one with the own national language. And it's the reason why we have insisted on the public media service, because if we want to have an independent public media service, because it's the first element to have a sort of independent media sector, then to have a possible competition between different media actors is fine, but it's not easy if you look to the size of the country. And certainly when we are speaking about television or when we are speaking about the new digital media. But it's true that the financial viability of the media council and the regulator also in this sector is very important, and we try to work on it. But maybe one day it will be useful to put around the table different representatives from different member states in the same situation, because it's not the first time that I've seen that it's not so easy to apply the same rules everywhere in the member states. If I may, one word on the other elements. You mentioned execution of judgment in a specific situation. I want just to insist on the fact that in the last report, we have also tried to do something about the execution of judgment. It was the execution of the judgment of the European Court of Human Rights. For the first time last year, we have put a sentence about the number of rulings of the European Court of Human Rights without a clear execution application in the member states. But I've seen in different member states more and more concerns about the non-execution by the public authorities of some justice decisions. And I'm sure that there is a role for maybe the Bar Association and the Parliament to work on it, to see what the situation is. Do you have problems with execution of some kind of judgment by the authorities? National decisions, of course, if it's a decision of the ECJ, it's our task to organize, implement the execution, and for the European Court of Human Rights, we are putting that in the report now. But for the national decisions, it's important to have an evaluation, because when we are speaking about the justice system, independence, quality, effectiveness, it's fine. But if at the end there is no execution of the decision, it's also a real issue for the citizens and for many actors. That's the first element. The second one is the relation with the European institutions that I didn't mention before, except for Europol in the investigation concerning the assassination of Daphne Caruana Galizia. But we try now also to see how it's possible to have the most efficient cooperation between the European Public Prosecutor Office and the delegate prosecutors in the country, but also all the participants in the justice system. I want to say that in Moldova, what we have as a problem, like in other member states, is the difficulty to work with investigative judges. because if you have an investigation organized by an investigative judge, you need to wait till the end of the investigations before to have a real information to the EPPO. And it's not fair, because the EPPO is in charge of different kind of criminal offense related to the EU funding. And so we'll have to discuss also with the Parliament about the different ways to manage that. But maybe it's useful for the National Parliament to have some contacts with the Chief Prosecutor, with Laura Covesi, when she's coming, because she was in Malta some time ago. But maybe in the future, when we will conclude our evaluation about the implementation of the EU regulation on the European Public Prosecutor Office, it will be important to show what are the possible solutions to reinforce the cooperation. Not only to have a good cooperation between European Public Prosecutor Office and the justice system, but also for the perception concerning, the fight against corruption. Because if there is a good collaboration between the national authorities and the European Public Prosecutor Office, that shows that there is no fear to open different kinds of investigations. If in some case it seems to be that there is just a national investigation without any willingness to correctly inform the Open Public Prosecutor Office, it's become to be strange, and of course there are many reactions on this. I insist on that because I know that the Chief Prosecutor is going in different member states and she tried to engage, but maybe also with the Parliament when we have a legislative issue, because you are not alone in such a situation to have investigative judges organizing some investigations without a real transfer of information. The second problem with the EPPO is the representation before the courts. We need to be sure it's possible for the Open Public Prosecutor Office to represent the office by himself before the court. And so to be sure that there is a solution. Maybe it will be by the law that it will be needed to do that. But again, it's a real set of rules that we need to change sometimes in the different legislation. But we'll see after the end of our evaluation about the appointment, to conclude on this, of former judges by the executive body, in fact. We have the same discussions with many functions at the different levels, also at the European level, with the judge, with other officials, and it's true that we need to fix some rules about that. And maybe it's an important debate that you will have to organize maybe in the country to see what are the minimum rules before the cooling period, before to get one of another function, and what kind of process to do that. If there is an appointment, who will be in charge to appoint? Is it just the executive body, or is it possible to find a way to have a correct process? Because sometimes it's useful to ask to a former judge to do something. I'm thinking about different kind of disciplinary regimes in some professions, and at the end, it's preferable to have a judge at the head of the body to decide, and sometimes it's a judge after his career. But who will be in charge to do that? What kind of rules? And just to put some rules on paper will be useful. That is true. That it's not a part of the report, but it's true that it's a possible positive evolution.
So thank you. Once again, I don't know if any other member of the committee has any comments. So in conclusion, Commissioner, I thank you once again for this discussion. We are in the same, we have the same frame of mind that we cannot stop reform, and we always reform is a continuous process, and we agree whether it's the rule of law, whether it is on equality, whether it is on any subject. I think that reform is important, that keeps going on, and this Parliament is always here to debate such reforms, and we look forward for more reforms that our country and our institutions need. Thank you very much for.
Thank you for such an opportunity to exchange with you. And again, we will come with the next report in July. You will see our assessment about the implementation of reforms. And on such a basis, it will be important maybe to put different kind of new laws or draft bills on the agenda of the Parliament. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I look forward to that. Thank you.